Hey there, freedom-loving carnivores. It's Jeff Dornick from Freedom First Network, and I've got a message for you. Are you tired of feeling like your beef choices are under siege? Well, fellow patriots, it's time to fight back with Prepper All Naturals. That's right, folks. In a world where the beef industry is under constant attack, Prepper All Naturals is here to stand tall and proud as a veteran-owned beacon of quality, taste, and freedom. When the guys at Prepper All Naturals set out to provide you with the finest beef products, they knew they had a duty to defend America's beef legacy, and that's why we're proud to partner with them, bringing you the best of what this great land has to offer. Whether it's their succulent freeze-dried beef cubes or their premium freezer boxes packed with steaks and roasts, we're redefining what it means to enjoy beef today and tomorrow. And let me tell you, folks, their freeze-dried beef isn't just delicious, it's built to last. With proper stores, their beef cubes can maintain their quality and freshness for up to a decade, ensuring you'll never have to compromise on taste or nutrition. But wait, there's more. They're not just in the business of selling beef. They're in the business of defending freedom. That's why they promise to never sell you anything less than 100% all-American natural beef. No lab-grown imposters, no experimental jabs, and certainly no compromises with the woke agenda. So, fellow beef enthusiasts, join us in our mission to protect America's beef legacy. Visit freedomfirstbeef.com and use code FFN for 15% off your order. Because when you choose Prepper All Naturals, you're not just eating well today, you're eating well tomorrow. And together, we'll ensure that beef remains a symbol of freedom for generations to come. Prepper All Naturals, where beef meets freedom.
Wow, what a mess this week has been. You got Joe Biden. I don't even want to get started on it, but we're going to have to talk about him because today's guest is somebody who knows quite a bit about him. He's been there with Joe Biden when he was vice president for years, and now he's going to spill the beans and talk about his new book, Joe Biden Unauthorized. We are very happy to have Mike McCormick joining us here in a moment. Actually, he's joining us right now. So let's play the intro. Our guest today, you may have seen him. He's been on the National Pulse. He's been on with Steve Bannon. He was on with Laura Ingraham. He's making his rounds because he has a very unique perspective, one that very, very few people in this world know. He had spent quite a bit of time in his career sitting right next to and even traveling sometimes with the former vice president and current president of the United States, Joe Biden. He was able to witness him in what I like to call his glory days, okay? Which those days are very well beyond and outside of his realm today. But our guest has seen both sides, and we are very pleased, blessed, and honored to have Mike McCormick join us today. Mike, how are you doing, sir?
Good, JD. Very well, and thanks for having me on. This is going to be an interesting chat about our current president, who I never thought would be a president, but here he is.
I'll admit I was one of those guys that wrote an article back in probably January or February of 2020 saying there's zero chance that Biden can even get the nomination, let alone win. He sure proved me wrong. You know, I want to take you back a bit to when you were in the White House. You were there through... Well, let's start there. Tell us, when were you in the White House? What did you do? And how did you gain your insights into Joe Biden?
Well, so I started in the White House as a White House stenographer. I was a contractor in 2002. I worked in that job, and the stenographer's job was with the White House press office. So I worked with the press very closely. I know a lot of the people that are covering the president now. Watched them as they covered him when he was vice president. And frankly, I understand that there's a huge cover-up going on right now. And I'll name names if you want to.
Oh, we will definitely get those names named.
We'll get there. Yeah. In 2002, I started with President Bush. And I worked there for about 5 years. And then I left for a couple of years and did a communications job down in Richmond. Lost that job in the economic downturn. Came back to the White House. Worked there. And in 2011, I started working specifically with Joe Biden as his stenographer till he left. And then I worked 1 year with President Trump, mostly focusing on Vice President Pence. And what the White House stenographer does is we go into any interview or press affiliated event by the president or the vice president, there has to be an official White House transcript. There were six of us in our office at the time. One of us would go in the room with a recorder, record it, bring it back, make a transcript of it. When I traveled overseas with Joe Biden, I was the only person doing that. So it was a big job. Joe Biden, back in his heyday, he loved to talk and talk and talk. Now, not so much. And that's a big reason why I think he's so mentally unfit. Actually, he's unfit to be president. But people, they looked past that. And there's a variety of reasons.
And we'll definitely get into those. I want to take you back to 2016. I was watching the Democratic National Convention. And I remember thinking, and I was watching Joe Biden during his speech there. And he was fiery. He was energetic. He was barely reading his teleprompter. Okay. He'd look at it, spit out some words. Then he'd look back at the crowd and he was just, shooting off the cuff. And this is something that people don't normally do. He was very good at it. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, I am so glad that he is not running and that we get to go against Hillary Clinton. Fast forward, and this guy is a shell of what he was. Right. Now, you have a book.
Yes.
You have a book. And this book, as we can see on the screen, Joe Biden Unauthorized. You go into details about not only, his history, everything that you experienced with him and with the people around him, but you also go into some stuff that I think may be pertinent to some people today. In my opening monologue before you came on, I said, I'm going to have to ask him, guys. I'm going to have to ask him, because if anybody knows, he would know. And whether it's in the book or not, we'll find out. So I'm going to go ahead and ask you. It's an uncomfortable question, but I would love a straight answer. Where are the bodies buried?
Well, that's Hunter Biden's laptop, right? I mean, Hunter Biden's laptop came out, and that corroborated a lot of what I had in my book. I wrote this book a year ago. It was published in March. Shutdown came days later. I actually wrote this book kind of thinking that the Democratic Party would want to throw this around amongst themselves to realize that Joe Biden wasn't really electable because he had so many problems in his background that I witnessed and that weren't reported by the press. That was the thing. I was standing there in the room. I saw it one way. The press saw it the other way, and they just shrugged it off. So to talk specifically about where the bodies are buried, the first chapter I have on Joe Biden starts with a close examination of his conduct during his trips to Ukraine, what he did with Ukraine. And I was on the plane with him to Ukraine 4 times. I went there with him. I didn't go every trip. Was it 4 or 3? I think it was 4. I was on that trip in December 2015 when he made that deal and said, I'm leaving in 4 hours, fire the guy or you lose the $1 billion. And so that actually doesn't play a big role in my book. What plays a bigger role in my book is a trip he took in March 2014. So let's go a quick look at the timeline. Now we know what a sleaze Hunter Biden was. We'd have a laptop. Everybody knows. A year ago, no one knew. There was one article written in the New Yorker magazine about that he wrote. It was kind of quasi-confessional about his cocaine problem and all his issues and why he got divorced. Well, this guy was a lot sleazier than he confessed to. A year ago, I was looking at the fact that Hunter Biden was this sleazy person that his dad was covering up almost constantly. He would go out and brag about this great Hunter Biden's doing this and this. And in the reality, he was a horrific person to his family and to our country, actually. He was a security risk. Joe Biden then decides and in 2014, the Senate had a report that came out in September. Hunter Biden got $3.5 million in a money transfer from the wife of the mayor of Moscow, a close confidant of Vladimir Putin. Joe Biden would have known that. Barack Obama would have known that. That would have been brought to their attention. In 2014, in February, Joe Biden knew that his son had been kicked out of the Navy for cocaine use, but nobody else in the world knew. The Navy kept it quiet. It wasn't until October 2014 that they talked about it. So Joe's going over to Ukraine to do this big rescue package. First, he stops off at a place in Poland. He goes to Poland and Lithuania. I was on that trip. You know who else was on that trip? Jake Sullivan was on that trip. Jake Sullivan is now, Hunter is now Joe Biden's NS National Security Advisor. And the reason, I think, is because he was covering up what Joe Biden was doing in Ukraine. So Jake Sullivan is on that trip. We go into Poland. Joe Biden's, one of his best friends from Poland is a guy named Alexander Kwasniewski. In the article that I referenced from the New Yorker magazine, it was published in 2019, Hunter Biden said the guy who recruited him to the Burisma Holdings board was Alexander Kwasniewski. He did that in early 2014. Joe Biden went to Poland, and in my book, I outline the fact that I think he contacted this guy, Alexander Kwasniewski. He's a former president of Poland. He, at the time, was on the board of Burisma Holdings. They're old friends. They worked together when Joe Biden was helping Poland get into NATO in the early 2000s. Old friends. Kwasniewski comes to D.C., gets a job with Georgetown University. Joe Biden's a big Georgetown fan. Joe goes to Poland to bring a message about, we're going to help Ukraine. They've been invaded by Putin. We're helping their energy sector. Well, who's he going to talk to? He's going to talk to Kwasniewski. He never admitted that. Joe Biden was always lying, and this is what I say in my book. He was always lying when he said he had nothing to do with his son's appointment to that board. I think he installed Hunter Biden on that board. I think he installed Hunter Biden as a quid pro quo with his friend Kwasniewski for some things that he did with Burisma. A month after he goes to Poland, he goes into the White House. And this is what I have in my book that no one else has. No one else has published this. I sent my book to the Senate committee that was investigating Hunter Biden, and no one looked at it. Never heard back. I talked about this to the FBI. I called their tip line in November, early November, or the day before the election, actually, because I was concerned. Look, the FBI is doing this investigation of money laundering and Hunter Biden. They should know these things that I have in my book. What happened in the White House in April 2014, April 15th, Joe Biden is out of the White House. He's in Boston. He's doing a big speech on the one-year anniversary of the Boston bombing. At that time, the Obama senior staffers knew Joe was going to be out of the White House. They held a meeting with Axelrod, Plouffe, and Messina in the Roosevelt Room. And I have that in White House visitor logs. So that's documented. After that meeting, the very first thing the next morning, Axelrod goes to the Naval Observatory. That's also documented in the White House visitor logs. No one else talks about this connection. What did they talk about on April 15th? And this is days before Joe Biden goes to Ukraine with this big money package of assistance for their energy security. So days before, what did they talk about? What did Axelrod talk about at this meeting in the Naval Observatory? 4 hours after that meeting, Joe Biden has a meeting in his office with Hunter Biden's business partner, Devin Archer. Right there. It's all in the visitor logs. Now, other people have reported on that meeting, but they didn't get these previous meetings. Within days, those guys are getting money transfers from Burisma Holdings. They're getting paid. They're on the board. Not publicly announced yet. Joe goes to Ukraine. On the flight to Ukraine, Jake Sullivan comes back. And this is in the book. This is a hiding in plain sight point that's in the book. And you can read it. It's documented. It's off a transcript that I wrote. Jake Sullivan. So this is how we travel on Air Force Two. I'm way in the back, little seats, still crowded and cramped. There's a whole group of people in the front of the cabin. Joe Biden is in the very front of the cabin. He's got kind of a big cabin to himself, couch. He's got a reclining couch he sleeps on, things like that. Senior staff up there, they go and they have meetings in his cabin. And then at some point they come back and they tell me, hey, they're going to do a gaggle on the plane. So my job is to pull out my recorder And as soon as Jake Sullivan comes back, I record it. There's a couple of press on the plane. Their questions, his answers are recorded. Official transcript goes to the White House press office. They release that to the world. Jake Sullivan comes back from this meeting and he says, I don't have the quote right in front of me, but basically he says, we're going in to help the president. We're going to go in and help Ukraine with energy security. And we want to help their natural gas industry, especially their unconventional natural gas industry, those who have unconventional reserves. That's Burisma's specialty. That's Jake Sullivan walking from a meeting with Joe Biden back to the press and promoting Burisma Holdings informally, not by name, doesn't come out of Joe Biden's mouth. In the transcript, officially, because it's on background, the speaker is identified as a senior administration official. Because I was standing there and I wrote this book, I can tell you it was Jake Sullivan. I'm the eyewitness. That's what happened. So then they go to Ukraine, big energy security. A month after that trip to Ukraine, Joe Biden goes to Cyprus, May 2014. About 5 days after Burisma Holdings officially announces Hunter Biden is on its board, Joe Biden goes to Cyprus. Ostensibly, he's there to negotiate a treaty with Cyprus because there's an old issue there. They want to unify Cyprus. Joe's been working on this. And there's a big chapter in there called Donors and Drug Dealers. And the chapter on that is Joe's donors were Greeks, and they wanted a really good package of Cyprus unification for their interests. Well, it never came to pass. But Joe goes on a Cyprus trip in May. Burisma Holdings is registered in Cyprus. When Burisma Holdings got caught by the UK Special Fraud Office for attempting money laundering transfer of massive amounts of money, I think it was $23 million, from UK into Cyprus, the UK froze it, and then they unfroze it, and the money wound up in Cyprus. That's where Burisma Holdings keeps their dirty money. That's where Joe Biden went. And on that trip was Jake Sullivan. Tony Blinken, who's now our Secretary of State, would have known what they were doing and when they were doing it. He had just passed the baton as Joe Biden's national security advisor on to Jake Sullivan just a matter of months before. Tony Blinken is as much up into this as anybody. And he would have known what was going on with Burisma and all that stuff. He's a close advisor. So the bodies are buried in plain sight. They're in the State Department. They're in the National Security Advisor's Office. They're in the Pentagon. They're in all the people that were close to Joe have crowded around him. And frankly, I think that's why he put him in there. He needs a cadre of close people. They're going to watch his back because he's going to be under fire, and he's under fire right now. You know, we don't know where he's going, how long he's going to stay. So that's the details of Burisma.
That is absolutely amazing. We're on with Mike McCormick, author of the book, Joe Biden Unauthorized. And as he just mentioned, you guys need to get this book because that story alone about Sullivan and Blinken should send chills through you, because these are the two men that just went to Anchorage and embarrassed us in front of the world. I mean, they put us to shame, and now these are, you know, Secretary of State and DNI. We know why. It's definitely not because of their skill. It's because they were being rewarded their loyalty through times of strife in Joe Biden's career as vice president, with Ukraine, with Hunter Biden's shenanigans, with Burisma. It's just terrible. Now, you have seen Joe at his best. And I would say, you know, I'm one of those guys that I am an independent, but I haven't voted for a Democrat, I think, ever. But with that said, Joe Biden, I always had thought he was one of the decent ones, okay? Back in, you know, the early days of his career, he was, he seemed not so radical. Today he seems radical, but that's a whole other discussion. But one thing that you got to experience with him was, you know, his ability to talk to people, talk to world leaders. I would say that he actually probably talked to more world leaders as before than he is today as president.
Right.
You've traveled with him. What are some of the experiences that you were able to have, you know, at his side when he's talking to, we know about Ukraine, but where else, what other dealings did he have that you were able to witness?
Well, I did go to China with him, and it didn't, you know, frankly, it didn't surprise me what happened. So let's just take, we'll take last week as a pretty good example. Vladimir Putin came out and embarrassed Joe Biden, kind of got after him about, you know, he just sort of challenged him after Biden said kind of something's not too smart in an interview. I was in Moscow and I watched Joe Biden get, in the book, I call it Bitch Slapped in Moscow. That's the name of the chapter, by Vladimir Putin. He was publicly humiliated. And no one heard about it back here. That's why I knew I had to write this book, because all this stuff was never reported. So that made the rounds in some of the news organizations, that story. Mm-hmm. Then the Chinese thing happens. Well, in 10 years ago, I was in Moscow with Biden when he got bitch slapped. 5 months later, we go to China. He gets roughed up in China, just like his people got roughed up in Anchorage. We were there in the room with Xi Jinping, and all of a sudden the Chinese decided that Joe Biden was talking too much. He was going on too long, and they started shoving the press out of the room. And they started physically shoving, like rugby scrub shoving. And, you know, I mean, I sort of fought him off for a minute or two, and then we got shoved out. And it was an insult. And there was a guy on the trip named Danny Russell. I've never seen an American. He was an American diplomat, kind of a senior level. I think he was State Department or White House, but he was a senior Asian guy. This guy is red faced, screaming at these Chinese guys and girls. There were some women there, about this treatment of the vice president's staff. Never seen it before. That's what happened in Anchorage. World leaders know that Joe Biden is easily manipulated. He's all bluster. He doesn't really back it up. He sounds like to make himself sound like a tough guy. It's not really there. And that's what comes out in the book. Now, there's some things that Joe Biden did that are admirable, mostly in our national interest, in internal politics, internal national politics, not international. I think he did a good job with the raising the level of acceptance of gay marriage. That was Joe Biden. And I wrote a chapter about that. And actually, people that read the book think it's pretty fair. It's not a hit job book. It's not a book to say, hey, this guy's a terrible human being, don't even think about him. It's more like, hey, this is a deeply flawed politician. And, you know, be careful with what you're getting if you're voting for him for president. That was before November 3rd. In the run-up to November 3rd, and the way that the COVID was manipulated by the Democratic Party, I have no respect for who Joe Biden has become, who the Democratic Party has become. It has been a naked power grab, and it's offensive that I think they had China helping them manipulate this election. I really do. I think they're going to start looking at ballots with some forensic audits, and they're going to find out some things. I worked in the White House for 3 election nights, 2004 when Bush got reelected, 2012 when Obama got reelected, and 2016 when Trump got elected. They never stopped counting, not once. This election, they stopped counting in 7 states in the middle of the night. They've never done that before. They've never had a flurry of mail-in ballots that came that were like numbers far beyond what there were registered voters in the states or the districts for. So this is a really suspicious election. And I think our forensic audits are going to find some things out about it. And actually, I sell bumper stickers on my website. Voter fraud is a hate crime. I'm really kind of sick of the Democrats talking all the time about, and here's the other one. Trump won, and it was a landslide. You know, I was down at the Washington Monument grounds in 2014. Washington Monument grounds when Trump did his speech on January 6th. And the thing was, what got the reason why the Democrats have fences around the Capitol still, the reason why they're terrified, is Donald Trump hit it on the – he nailed it. He hit it on the head when he said he had the most votes of any president who got reelected. He added 12 million. I think he went from 63 to 75 or more. 12 million votes. That's almost 20%. That put the fear of everything into the Democrats. And that's why they went through that charade with this, you know, this impeachment after the, you know, quote unquote, the riots or whatever you want to call them. I mean, there was some bad stuff that happened. You know, that stuff shouldn't have happened. Those people should have stayed away. I did. You know, they shouldn't have gone in there, but it was really confusing what was happening there. And so what really the scary part of the day for the Democrats was Trump was right. He had 20% more legal votes from one term to the next, and they had to negate that or else there was a whole new way of looking at politics in America. And it was coming from Donald Trump.
I would say it was actually probably more than 20%.
I'd agree.
Yeah. It is a shame. And we've had, I had a guest earlier today, Lieutenant General Tom McInerney, who was saying some very similar stuff. We've covered it on Knock Report from the beginning. We continue to cover it, even though they don't like it in big tech when we do. So we just don't upload those certain videos to YouTube or Facebook. They don't mind. We still have good places like Rumble, Locals, of course, Apple Podcasts, which is oddly very good at maintaining free speech, at least so far. Knock on wood. Spotify banned us, but that's a whole other discussion. We are on with Mike McCormick, whose book, Joe Biden Unauthorized, you had mentioned earlier that – oh, keep the book up because they can't see on the screen yet. Keep it up there for actually give me 30 seconds. And then once you start talking, you know, keep it up for 5 more seconds and we'll go from there. You'd mentioned earlier naming names amongst journalists who are in some way complicit, some way have been covering, not covering, doing the wrong things. You name the names in the book. Why don't you give us teasers? Give us something juicy. You already have with the Blinken and Sullivan stuff. That stuff I hadn't heard before. That stuff that my audience probably hasn't heard before. We need to get that information out there, and we need to get your book out there. But what else? Tell me, you teased us with the journalist stuff. What was that all about?
Well, so here's the book, Joe Biden Unauthorized and the 2020 Crackup. And if you buy it on my website, so the website is www.joebidenauthorized.com. I donate 10% of all website sales to National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund because the Democratic Party has abandoned our national law enforcement. Our Blue Lives Matter, Blue Families Matter. The Democratic Party does not have their back. The journal. So in the book, the book is kind of like a 30,000 foot view flying through 6 years of the Biden presidency. And in hindsight, we find out all these things about Hunter. We're finding more and more and more. What I did, I wrote an article on nationalpulse.com website about the cover up that I kind of touched on in the book. So the book doesn't name the names. This article does. In the book, I talk about this series of pool parties that Joe Biden used to have at his vice president's residence. They called it the Biden Beach Boardwalk Bash. And they invite only progressive journalists. And they would, so if you go to nationalpulse.com and you Google or you do search for Biden Beach Boardwalk Bash, you know, you can read the article that's there. And basically, there was a whole list of journalists who were in these pool parties. And now they're the ones that are covering the White House, and they're not telling us how badly compromised Joe Biden is. And the one main one I mentioned in that article is Nora O'Donnell of CBS News. Nora O'Donnell did a 12-minute, 46-second interview with Joe Biden just before the Super Bowl. She's known Joe Biden for years. She and her family went to this pool party 3 times. It was held 3 times, 2011, 2014, 2016. She went there with her family. And one time, and this is what's in the article in the National Pulse, one time I was in an interview and my job was basically to stay just off camera with a microphone, record what was said between the two people, and then go back and make the transcript. So I would be in the room waiting for the vice president and president to come in. They would come in. There'd be a little chit chat. Well, at this point of the interview, she leans forward to Joan and she goes, "Oh, the kids had such a great time at your pool party the other day." And Joe's like, "Oh, okay, that's fantastic." Well, at that point, I knew this was a big deal to these journalists. It really mattered to them that they got invited to this thing, and it reflected into their coverage. Nora O'Donnell did a 12-minute and 46-second interview of Joe Biden to the Super Bowl audience. It was supposed to be 20 minutes. In a CBS pre-programming promo she did, she said, "I've got a 20-minute sit-down with the President of the United States." This is the first journalist who's been in the White House since he was inaugurated. She said nothing about him being declined. She barely mentioned what he was going to do with China. It was so surfacey and shallow. Almost 7 minutes, more than 7 minutes, were erased from their time span. I think they edited out huge chunks because he was stumbling over his words and they didn't want to make him look bad. So this is a journalist who knows what Joe was like and is covering up. If you're not telling us the truth, you're withholding information like that, that's a lie. And she should not be on television. She should not be a journalist. The eight Associated Press reporters were in on those parties. Julie Pace is the bureau chief there. I think she's been, you know, putting her thumb on the scales for the Obama administration since she was in the White House briefing room. And she was there. And AP was there. ABC, CNN, all those guys. Jake Tapper, Chuck Todd, Jim Avila, all these guys were in there, and men and women. And it just, you know, it just sort of piles up. So it's pretty bad. And this is all, by the way, I found this through White House visitor logs. These are, you know, documented entries and exits for the Biden Beach Boardwalk Bash.
That's amazing. Absolutely amazing. We're on with Mike McCormick. Mike, I have one more question for you. This is the important question.
Yeah, good.
But before we get to it, I do want to give you an opportunity to, you know, you've told us your website, tell it to us again. Anything else you have going, any future products or projects you've got going, bumper stickers, all of that good stuff. Go ahead.
Right. Yeah. The website is www.joebidenunauthorized.com. I also wrote a book about my first several years of the White House. As an Obama employee who realized that Donald Trump was going to win, and that's called 15 Years of Deplorable, a White House Memoir. And that kind of outlines the beginning of cancel culture. It started in that White House, and it started all around, and it actually caught up with me there. That's why I'm writing books now. And these are the bumper stickers. There's a whole bunch. There's a whole bunch on the website, and you can buy bumper stickers. You can buy books. You can buy a combination. And so you can buy both my books, bumper stickers. www.joebidenunauthorized.com is the website.
Perfect. So we've touched on it throughout. I think we've established, I don't think it would be a shocker to anyone, that Joe Biden is obviously very clearly in decline. My question for you, though, is as somebody who's been so close to him and who sees the very little that we've seen from him so far, is he going to make it? I mean, is he going to finish off his term? Is he going to finish off 2021? Is, in your opinion, as somebody who knew him personally, do you think that Joe Biden is already on his way out?
Well, that's a good question. You know, the fall down the stairs is pretty revealing on the Air Force One stairs the other day. But I do know Joe Biden is a surprising guy. I think he finishes out a year. I think he's going to fight to stay through the whole first term. I actually think in his mind, he thinks he can do another term. He's so out of touch with how the world sees him, which may be why he wound up president. I mean, that may be his greatest strength. He just doesn't get how you know, compromised he was, and it just all fell into place. Unfortunately, there was this is, you know, I consider him an illegitimate president, but he doesn't care. He's in the White House. I think he sticks around for at least a year. I think he's going to go into 2022. I think it really matters about the people that I named, Blinken, Sullivan, his chief of staff, Ron Klain, is an old ally, very trustworthy. The Secretary of State, Lloyd Austin, is also a Biden guy. Everybody else in the cabinet is sort of Obama-ish. And Kamala Harris has to rise to the level of being competent, more competent than Joe. She's got a lot of work to do. She's not a very good vice president. I don't think she'd be a good president. I don't know what would happen if Joe Biden left office in 3 months. She wouldn't be ready, and the world would know it. There are authoritarian regimes that are sharpening their swords right now for this, and it is something that has to be noted. I think Joe stays in. I think the Democratic Party is doing a horrific cover-up. I think they're promoting COVID to kind of protect Joe. I think these COVID shutdowns are a way to keep him from having to be out there in public more. And this is really going to start to, the truth is coming out. And we're at that point now where the truth is coming out. So we'll see what happens. But I think the truth is coming out about Joe. And, you know, all bets are off. 2022, I don't think, is a good year for the Democrats. 2020 wasn't a good year for the Democrats.
No, it was a horrible year. As I agree with you, there's enough suspicious stuff to lead us to believe that maybe it was a much worse year than we even know. Mike McCormick, Joe Biden Unauthorized. You can get it on Amazon, but the best place to get it is to go to joebidenunauthorized.com. That's www.joebidenunauthorized.com. Mike, it has been a pleasure having you on. I'd love to have you on in the future.
Great. Would love to do it, JD. It was fantastic. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. Talk to you soon.
Okay, we'll talk soon.
All right, bye-bye.
Can you smell it? It's your favorite freshly ground coffee brewing in your favorite cup. If you're anything like me or my family, coffee is essential for our mornings. And even more essential is good quality coffee. Well, Freedom First Coffee is our preferred choice. Made from organically grown beans from Mexico and Peru, they're then roasted here in the USA. So head on over to freedomfirstcoffee.com and choose our Founders Blend in medium or dark roast, ground or whole bean. That's freedomfirstcoffee.com. And make sure you use promo code NOCK, that's N-O-Q, for 10% off your order. And if you really want to be a freedom lover, choose a monthly subscription so you will never be without your Morning Joe. Again, that's freedomfirstcoffee.com.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Time for an NOQ report news update.
NOQ report news update with Mayor David Rubin, former mayor of Shiloh, Israel, who's on today to talk about the results of the Israeli election. I do want to mention also that David Rubin is the founder of the ShilohIsraelChildren.org organization. You can find out more about him and the great work he does for Israeli children at davidrubinisrael.com. Tell us, Mayor Rubin, what is going on now when the election looks very, very close? Will Benjamin Netanyahu, will he have to build a coalition?
There is no prime minister in Israel, no potential prime minister in Israel that has ever been able to form a government without forming a coalition. Coalition is always a requirement because there are about 10 parties that enter the Israeli Knesset, the Israeli parliament. No one gets nearly enough seats in the parliament to be able to form a coalition on his own. So the coalition has to be formed with an assortment of different parties. They have to negotiate. And it's a long process. It's a long process. It could take anywhere up to anywhere from 30 to 60 days. Looks like it's going to be the 10 or 11 parties. Yes, they're going to have seats in the Knesset to varying degrees, starting with Netanyahu's Likud, which will have approximately 30 seats. And but then, you know, who knows? Who knows? We may end up going to another election, a fifth election in 2 years.
Or not? Yeah. Is that so surprising for Israel to have to go through five elections in 2 years?
Well, it actually is a bit abnormal, and the reason for it is because Netanyahu has developed an aura around himself. You know, it's become very much the Netanyahu administration. And but I could tell you that Netanyahu, his problem is that he's equally disliked. He's made a lot of enemies along the way. He's been prime minister for 12 consecutive years. We don't have term limits here. And he keeps getting reelected. But the problem is that he has all these enemies, and he has to form a coalition. So he has to negotiate with all of these political enemies and has to try and coerce them or persuade them, perhaps would be a better word, to join his coalition. And it's not so easy. There are two right-of-center, moderate-sized parties, and Netanyahu is also slightly right-of-center. But these two right-of-center parties are refusing to join his coalition. They've made a promise, public promise, during the campaign. They will not join a Netanyahu-led coalition, no matter what. And because of that, he can't get to a majority.
Well, and so what is it a personal issue? Is it his style? He's just not conciliatory. What is it a crisis of? What's the problem there with him?
It's mostly personal. Now, you have to understand that both of the leaders of those two moderate-sized, slightly right-of-center parties that do not want to join a Netanyahu coalition are former members of the Likud, which is Netanyahu's political party, election.
Right. Do you think is Netanyahu a man who is willing to say, you know something, I'm going on a sabbatical here?
Extremely doubtful. One of the problems is that Netanyahu, despite the fact that he's 71, 72 years old, but he is the man who has been prime minister for 12 years, remember, 12 consecutive years. And he really should have been grooming somebody, an eventual successor.
Yeah.
And he hasn't been doing that. He's refused to do it. Anytime someone looks like an eventual successor, he views him as a threat and he demotes him. And that's what has happened. That's why he has made so many enemies.
What do you think is going to happen in the next 48 hours? Anything significant?
I think that the only hope, the only serious hope, is that somebody, and possibly the president of Israel, you know, Israel does have a president. It's not
sure.
The prime minister is the political leader. The president is mainly a ceremonial post. But, you know, it's kind of like Queen Elizabeth, I guess,
sure.
without the problematic grandchild or problematic child.
Mother-in-law.
But the president has one important task, and that is to decide who is going to form a coalition. And he also has moral influence that people listen to. So it's very possible he may sit down with the two refusers who are refusing to negotiate with Netanyahu for coalition building, and they're refusing because of personal issues. It could be that they're going to have a conversation with leftists.
Well, great. Well, listen, at that, we're going to have to wait for another update from Mayor David Rubin, former mayor of Shiloh, Israel. He's the author of the book, Trump and the Jews. How are bookshelves going, by the way?
Oh, they're still selling.
David Rubin, thank you so much for being on the Knock Report.
Folks, listen up. I've got something crucial to share with you today. In this uncertain world, you need to be prepared for anything, especially when it comes to your health. That's where The Wellness Company comes in, offering you peace of mind in a box with their medical emergency kit. Picture this. You're faced with a medical emergency and you need quick, effective treatment. The Wellness Company's medical emergency kit is like having a strategic arsenal of life-saving medications right at your fingertips. From proven treatments like ivermectin to generic Z-Pax and amoxicillin, this kit has got you covered. But that's not all. Every kit comes with a medical emergency guidebook, ensuring you have the knowledge to use these medications safely and effectively. It's like having a medical professional right there with you when you need it most. And here's the kicker. Use code FFN to get 10% off your medical emergency kit at twc.health/FFN. That's right, folks. 10% off, peace of mind in a box. Don't wait until it's too late. Get your medical emergency kit today and be ready for whatever comes your way. Stay safe, stay prepared with The Wellness Company. Again, use code FFN to get 10% off your medical emergency kit at twc.health/FFN.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.